You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast for a happy March 2nd Friday. The Friday, March 2nd, I guess, if you're listening to this podcast, recording this on Thursday night, March 1st. All of it's pretty relevant. And right now on the line, of course, is me, Adam Friedman, staff writer, IndyCornrows.com. And joining me for a special, I guess, weekend preview, we're calling it, is my lovely co-host, Tony East, a man with too many titles, but writes way too many places and way too many times a week. But he's on the other line anyways.
I do not write too much a week. Do I write too much a week?
Do you write more than, let's say, five times a week?
I try to get five up a week.
But is that just one site, or is like how?
That is at one place mostly, yeah.
Yeah, so combining all your sites, is it like 12?
No, I've never broken like more than eight in a week, probably.
Okay, I would say more than one per day, especially since you kind of like have another job.
I do have another job.
So, I mean, I guess you find the time between that and Fortnite, you find some time.
Those are the only three things I do and work out.
Yeah, and Tony goes to the gym a lot, apparently.
I'm a gym guy. I've been hitting the bike recently. I like the bike.
Ah,
a lot less painful on my feet than running, even though I ran cross country in high school.
I'm a big fan of the row machine, but this is a great podcast right now, talking about how we work out. I'm sure people out there love this.
What isn't working out is the Pacers right now.
And there's if you're new to the show, there's a classic Tony T's transition, whatever you want to call it. Classic one of those. If you're new to the show, welcome in. If you're a previous listener, welcome in as also. We're going to do a great show for you. First thing we got up on today's docket is going to be the Pacers' pretty miserable week. So wow. Monday, they lost to the Mavs 109-103. And they lost what is last night for us, but it's going to be on Wednesday for you guys, to the Hawks 107-102. Two teams who have a combined win total, I think, of 38 games. And the Pacers have won 34 games. So I think the Mavs and Hawks are the two worst teams, or the worst teams in each conference, if I'm not mistaken, or close to it. It kind of changes a lot.
Probably. I mean, in the West, the Mavs are probably better than a few teams. But in the East, I mean, maybe the Magic, but probably the Hawks are definitely down there.
I'm pretty sure coming into Monday, like the bottom eight teams in the NBA had lost like 40 straight combined. And then the Pacers knocked that out by losing to two of the bottom eight teams in the league.
And then the Grizzlies played the Suns, which is unfair because one of them has to win.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, I guess that also works. But I'm saying that Pacers shouldn't have lost to these two teams. And It's really bad because after the All-Star break, the Pacers have the toughest schedule record-wise for the last 24 games of their season. We talked about this last week on our podcast. I wrote about it for Indy Cornrows, but they play like the Warriors twice, the Toronto twice, Boston, and they have this huge slate of playoff teams come up this weekend. I mean, they have some brutal games, and Tony and I were going through the schedule before the show, and we think there's maybe, what, 6 to 8, like, should-be guaranteed wins, but now nothing's guaranteed.
Yeah, it's really disappointing that worked out, and especially with the game every other day, it's not like they're going to be super well rested for any of them either. So there's not like a clear cut way besides their one or two remaining home games against cake opponents that they're going to just get an easy win.
Yeah, I mean, the clear cut way is hoping that some teams have some bad stretches as well. I imagine most of the teams for the end of the year have like somewhat hard, like not like, I'm not saying like brutal record-wise, but brutal every other day type of schedule, because I think the Pacers were ahead of most teams in game played heading into the All-Star break. So I imagine the team have to catch up. They also get to play the Pelicans on that weird day of Pelicans that played like nine times in a week.
Yeah, that'll be the strangest game ever.
If they lose that game, we should be really, really worried.
Imagine if the Pelicans win all three of those, that'd be crazy. And no one gets injured.
Yeah, and that team that has like, what, seven quality players, maybe? That actually are healthy still. I mean, they actually play. I mean, they've been decimated.
Yeah, it's bad. Getting off Oshik was nice, though, because Mirotić is helping them.
Yeah, but then looking at the rest of the Pacers schedule, because we want to sort of hit why it's we are pretty nervous, is basically it's going to come down to, well, they can beat the Hornets twice at the end of the season. If you look at it, basically, the Hornets are kind of out of the playoff race. The Pacers' best thing going for them right now is basically the Pistons are under 500, right? That's the best thing they have going for them.
28-32.
I said before the show, 7 wins probably still gets you in the playoffs. 41-41. They're 34-27 right now. You think you need 8-10 then?
So the Pistons are 29-32. So out of their last 21 games, they'd have to win 12 to get to 41. And that's not crazy, you know, but they've been struggling with Blake. They're 4-6 in their last 10. And the Hornets are 28-34. So they have to win 14 of their last 20 to get to or excuse me, 13 of their last 20 to get to 41. But they have an easy schedule the rest of the way. So really, both of those teams are not technically out of the realm of possibility yet.
So should we just give up on the Pacers being a top five seed, basically?
I gave up a while ago, but yes.
Oh, wow. That shows a lot about you. Wow. I guess if they are able to beat Milwaukee and the Wizards this weekend, win two of the three, we'll talk about those games later in the show, then that gives me more hope. Because I mean, I'm not sure those teams are better than the Pacers, and they seem to play up to their opponents at times and down to their opponents. You know, they always seem to be hanging around a lot of these games and just come down to the end of the game with a couple plays break their way. I mean, a great example was against Dallas where if Depot doesn't step out of bounds with Dennis Smith, basically the way the play was set up, Dennis Smith got trapped in the corner and tried to throw it out. Depot tipped it, but was standing out of bounds. But like if his foot is 3 inches more to the right, then he's inbounds, he steals that ball. It's 103-101 with the Pacers having the ball with under 20 seconds, and they might win that game somehow in overtime. So, I mean, they hang around and they don't lose any game convincingly except to the Rockets apparently. But I think it's just whether they can kind of pull it out and run that Depot isolation play at the end of games to win them.
Yeah, the Depot, Miles Turner, please come up here and set a big good pick for me play. Seems to be a staple. Another thing to look out for on the schedule is their home and away splits. They are a lot better at home. They're 21-11 at home and 13-16 on the road. So I know they have two road games coming up this weekend, and they kind of have a road heavy schedule too. So they're gonna have to find a way to win some of these games away from Banker's Life.
Yeah, looking back at the past two games, do you think we'll talk about Oladipo slumping, shooting later, and the Collison injury and his possible return. But do you think – I mean, I'm thinking the biggest issue was the foul trouble. Is that kind of what points out to you?
Somewhere else? The Hawks, I would also point to turnovers a little bit. They had 24, I think, was the number. Yeah, they only had 12 against the Mavs, but they had 24 against Atlanta. So in that game, I'm going to go fouls and turnovers. You know, Sabonis had 5, a lot. Bojan had 4. Vic and Corey had 3. Lance had 5. Like, they were just not taking care of the ball at all. But against Dallas, yeah, definitely fouls. Joseph had 5. Turner had 3. Vic had 4. And he was the one that I think that McMillan should have been more aggressive about playing. And Lance also had 3. So they were just playing less aggressive because of that.
Yeah. When Vic gets in foul trouble, this team is kind of screwed.
Yeah. He only played 22 minutes.
Yeah. And they're completely screwed. I also think as Dallas, part of it was I think Turner needed to demand the ball a little more. I think he had like 18 points or in the first three quarters. He only finished the game with 24. I mean, he seemed like everything was open for him.
And that would be the same number of points per quarter every quarter.
Maybe he had, but like it seemed like in the fourth quarter. Okay. All right, let me take a step back. If you're dominating a game, let's say you have 18 points through the first three quarters in the close game, you should probably finish the game with 30, right?
Yeah, the Mavs centers just couldn't stretch out with him, and he made both his threes and all his jumpers, and he had 11 rebounds. Like, he was just dominating in all aspects of the game.
Yeah, and it seemed like in the fourth quarter they didn't try to run extra things for him. So maybe they ran the same couple plays they always run each quarter, but they didn't seem to say, you're hot right now, Turner. We're going to run multiple plays for you. And I think part of that is Turner's not willing to demand the ball. You know, not to be the selfish kind of star and say, hey, I'm shooting 10 of 12, whatever it is. I need to get the ball every time, so like, I need to shoot. But also, as McMillan, I think, is kind of afraid to. And I didn't like that whole coaching situation, honestly, in the Dallas game. It frustrated me. He kept Lance in too long. There were so many little things that when a game you only lose basically by one possession at the end of the game that just were bothering me the whole night.
Lance did not play good in this game.
he didn't have a quick trigger on Lance. He like let him hang around and make 4 or 5 mistakes before he finally said, oh crap, he must not be playing well.
So Vic was 8 of 10 inside the 3-point line too. Like they were getting their shots in from inside the line, except for Thad. It's just I it was hard to figure out what the equitable decision of who to shoot the most shots in the fourth was. And Lance was the wrong answer because he was not hitting anything. He was 0-for-4 from three. He was a minus 20. So he was not having any fun, and he was not the answer.
Yeah, Lance is never the answer. We saw that in the previous Dallas game, right? Where he dribbled the ball.
Lance has been the answer a few times, but not definitely in that one.
Yeah, before the show, Tony said to me, and I said it about Bojan, that neither Bojan nor Lance be playing in the last 3 or 4 minutes of a game. They just don't have a clutch gene. They just don't have – I mean, I know it's like a made-up thing, but they just – They turn over the ball at the most inconvenient times.
I said that they should be playing. I said that they shouldn't be doing something meaningful.
They shouldn't have the – yeah, they shouldn't have
like
the ball.
Like dribbling, yeah.
Yeah, no, in the Hawks game, I mean, I know they were down four, but running that play to get – I mean, I guess they were kind of stuck on the out-of-bounds play, but as soon as the ball hit Bojan's hands, he just lost it. Like, it's ridiculous how often Bojan and Lance just make, like, these frustrating little, like, just stupid mistakes in the end of games that either cost the Pacers or almost cost the Pacers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really hope Glenn gets up to it eventually so he can start up a Bojan. I think of the lineup for the end of games.
Glenn was finally good in the Mavs game, too.
Yeah, I mean, with Glenn, it's going to be up and down for at least 2 or 3 weeks.
For sure.
I mean, he looks like he's in shape, but he's not in game shape. I mean, when you miss that much time, you just can't be in the NBA game shape yet.
He's finding good cutting seams and things like that, but that's not like we got to play this guy in the fourth quarter because he's going to cut really well. Like, his shots was falling in the Mavs game, which is good, but his defense hasn't been as good as it was last year yet. But that goes back to what you said. When he's more in game shape, I think that'll come.
He also hasn't hit a 3-point shot, and ultimately Bojan's biggest strength of being on the court is just the threat of being able to shoot the three. And not necessarily he's going to make it because he really seems to late never make it, but just a threat that he could get the ball and shoot.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I hope he can get the three to fall eventually because that's what the difference between him and Bojan really is. So we'll have to see if that ever happens for him.
Yeah. Speaking of another player whose three ball is not falling since the new year, Victor Oladipo. Tony's been harping on me for going on 2 or 3 weeks now that we talk about Vic slumping. And I said, hold off. But finally, I'll let him do it. So since Vic returned from his injury.
Yeah, I did it last night already.
Oh, well, I'm going to say anyways. I know you talked about it last night, but we'll go more in depth. He's shooting in, Tony probably said on this show, I'm guessing quote for quote, an even 28%.
Injury. It's the turn of the year. Yeah, well, no, because I didn't have the game log for the Hawks game yet when I did it. So he was 29.1 or something like that for me. And then 24% since Collison's injury, which is now down to like 21 or something.
Yeah, if you look at just his last like 6 games, you get a 2-for-8, a 2-for-8, and a 1-for-9. That's gonna really bring down your percentage.
Just yeah, like a 1-for-9 is like if he goes 3-for-9, they just win last night. Like that was the difference. He just couldn't get it to drop.
Yeah, a couple stats though that are more in his favor. One, he's still shooting 37% on the year from three, which means this is sort of the reaction to the counter reaction to the fact that he shot probably 45% from three to start the season, it seemed like. I mean, there was a stretch, I think, early on where he was in like he was like a 52% shooter, 45% three, and 70% free throw shooter, but something really close to the 50-40-90 club.
Yeah, you know, the Ben, yes, exactly. And the pull-up threes were falling for him for the longest time, like a crazy, crazy, crazy rate. And now that that's over, you know, it's really falling. But it shouldn't have fallen this far. You know, I can't imagine that this is how he actually lined up as a player either. But the noteworthy part, too, and I've been bad about phrasing this on Twitter. I'll take blame for this. But the slump, it really has only been in his three-point shooting. You know, his inside-the-arc percentages still look good. He now is first in the league in steals per game. He had a crazy amount of steals in the month of February. I don't remember the exact number, but I wish I did because it blew my mind. I tried to pull it up that fast, and I blew it. But it was a crazy amount of steals that he had in February. So he's still impacting the game and, like, is substantially the most important player. The three is just not going in.
Yeah, he shot. So before his injury, he shot 42% from three. So I don't know if that's maybe there's a correlation at this point. But that's, I mean, that's how good he was before. And now, and also, if you look at his since I think he came back from injury, he's still a plus 7.3.
Yep.
I mean, that means either defensively he's awesome or he's doing so well around the rim that it's kind of countered out that. And we talked about it a little bit, you know, before the show, you said, you know, if Vic's three isn't falling and teams stop respecting it, then they're going to stop playing him, like kind of play off him and screw up the spacing. But then that kind of forces the reaction of the Pacers putting the ball in his hands all the time, which I don't think teams want because the Pacers' most reliable, at least they think their most reliable offensive play is running a high screen Oladipo pick and roll. I mean, the last 5 minutes, the Pacers just run that play over and over again. So, you know, McMillan must think that's the best play they have in their playbook. So I'm not sure teams want to see that run the entire game. I know that it hurt his usage rate and things like that. But if the counter reaction is to this whole slumping threes, it forces the ball in Depot's hands more. I'm not sure that's a bad thing.
I don't think it forces the ball in his hands more. I just think it makes everybody get guarded differently and it makes adjustments happen, which he's never good. And, you know, a catch and shoot three is an easy shot for him. So they won't lay like so far off of him, just like a little bit more to muck up the spacing. I don't know if that'll happen unless it gets like this for another month, but it's been a very concerning 2 months. And the pull up three that he was off the dribble that he was just killing it on and, you know, really changing games with was probably a fluke the whole time anyway. So that being gone is concerning.
By the way, his steal stats, he had 28 steals in the month of February.
3.8 per game. I got it up at the same time as you. That's insane.
That is insane.
Insane. I got to write about that.
Yeah. He's probably, I don't know if he's in the elite level guards defensively in this league, but he's probably inching his way up there. I mean, obviously, there's like
very close.
But he is maybe the best defensive guard in the Eastern Conference now left. Now that Avery Bradley got traded to the West.
I got to think about that.
Yeah. I mean, there's some good ones. I'm trying to think who the best ones in the East are at this moment.
Let's see a list of teams before I make any branching statements here. That's quite a take. What position is Ben Simmons?
So that's kind of the take. He's brought. Yeah. I mean, he plays point guard right now. So he's definitely. Yeah,
he's one of them.
But he also has the freaking body of a center. So I don't. He's like Matt Johnson, but can't shoot.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. But he would be he's a really good defensive guard. But that's probably the best one outside of only one who contends with Depot in the East.
But even when the Pacers played the Sixers, did Simmons guard Oladipo? I don't remember.
Don't remember either.
I want to say he kind of guarded Collison and played kind of the roaming defender.
Yeah, well, it depended who they had on the floor, but he was roaming a lot.
But we'll get to see that again, though. They played the 76ers later on in the season at some point.
Yeah,
A couple weeks, I think.
Two more times, I think, right?
Yep, they play. No, just one more time. They only play once.
Oh, okay.
They played them three times, the Wizards three times, and the Bucks four.
Right. Yeah,
because they're not in their conference.
That Sixers game's important division.
It's going to be important just like the ones this weekend, which we will talk about later. But somebody could be playing this weekend.
Hey!
Hopefully, maybe.
Spacing, we had a million transitions we could have gone with there.
But I hit the right one and you sort of kind of ruined it. You sort of kind of mucked it up. I really hit it right and then you mucked it up.
No, we need to.
Collison could play Friday. That's what I was trying to get to.
I wish I could see who that report was from. It was on Roto World. But I totally believe it, and I think the plan might have been to just hold them out for these Dallas and Atlanta games, thinking they'll win anyway. So they just held them out, gave him some rest. Did you see the video before the Mavs game of him shooting around?
I did a little bit.
Yeah. So he was moving okay, and his shot looked fine. So maybe it was just precautionary, but they kind of need him because, like I told you before this, on the season, with Collison on the court, the Pacers shoot 40% from three, and when he's off, it's down to 33%. So he really just spaces everything out, and he runs the offense perfectly. He's really good at that first snap in the first pass and cutting through the lane. And he just does a lot of little minute things so well that make things click for the team. And I think his absence recently has very much shown itself.
Yeah, maybe that's the solution, is him coming back to all these Wolves. I have a hard time thinking that they should have beat the Hawks or Mavs, but maybe it's a solution because he probably adds a couple points. I mean, but before the injury, he was playing at a top 10 point guard this season level. I mean, you look at some, or at least offensively, look at some of the stats. I mean, he was up there in win shares and PER with some of the best point guards in the NBA, like Kemba level kind of good, which is something amazing for Collison to reach at his age and never really having been there. But hopefully he can get back to that level when he returns. I mean, the surgery didn't seem like it was that invasive. It was a little cleanup, nothing like major. And maybe it should be better because his knee won't hurt as much. That also could be a thing. But like you said, he adds to this offense because he is such a good ball controller and setting everybody up and just getting guys in the right spots at the same times and not turning over the ball, where Depot has a little higher turnover rate than Collin Simmons and all their issues. So it'd be good to have him back and also put Joseph back in the bench where he fits better.
It's just something. Yeah, that was what I was going to say after I said this. It's just something else for the defense to worry about besides Oladipo when they're on the court. Like, if they shut down the Turner Depot pick and roll, then the Pacers have to set something else up. But when Collison's out there, they have to stretch out and guard him and make sure he doesn't cut and things like that. But the big difference for me, you know, the drop between Darren and Corey, there's two things to talk about there. One is it's not like a huge drop, but it's also that Corey fits better with the bench. So there is sort of a drop there. But the drop, and you've talked about this before, is when Joe Young's playing 22 minutes a game. You know, I talked about Wednesday that he's been shooting great, and he absolutely has, and he's cemented that he's an NBA player, but his defense is still really bad, and it just changes everything when a guy that doesn't play a ton is in there for significant minutes.
Yeah, and it's a different kind of drop, because Joseph is an increase in defense, but a drop off in offense.
Yes.
I think from, but it's all about his backup, and Joe Young is fine, but he's not, you know, like I said, Darren Collison has played at a top 10 level point guard, and when you lose a guy like that, it hurts you. He might be their second best player this season.
Well, and another Joe Young thing, sorry, is that he would probably fit better with the starters than next to Lance, right? And I think it was that first Hawks game where Nate started him in the second half, so maybe that would have helped this whole time. But anyway, I thought of that while we were
there. And not a lot of players fit well next to Lance unless they're willing to just but you have to really be a non-serious player to play with Lance. Like, you have to be willing to let him steal your rebounds and talk his way up and make all the super judgments. Like, not, I'm just, that's kind of the way Joseph is. Joseph kind of plays a little light, same with Sabonis. That's where they fit well with him. But I'm not sure Joe Young, who's kind of like a scrapper trying to hang around the league, feels comfortable around Lance, because he, like, you know, Joe Young needs every little thing to go his way to be on this league, be in this league next year. And he's probably worried about it, versus like Joseph and Sabonis are not worried about being cut next year. They know they're in this league. Joseph will have a spot in this league until the day he's like 35 and can't move.
Yeah, for sure. He fits next to everybody. Also, we should put up a $5 bounty for a minute or 2 minute long compilation of Corey Joseph reactions to Lance.
I would do that. It's hilarious. Some of his faces
so funny.
So some of the times where he like looks at Lance, he's like, "What are you doing?" I've seen him yell at Lance. I've seen him be happy at Lance. I mean, it's like there was one play where I think Lance went to the rim and didn't pass the ball out, and Joseph went up to him and just said, "Pass the ball, you effer," basically next time. Like,
and they're like, you can tell it's like a basketball relationship, not like they hate each other. But
don't hate each other. Joseph, I think, sees the game in such like a cerebral way, and Lance plays with so much just like heart. Like, Lance is kind of like, he just plays with the flow of the game, and Joseph is like looking for the right pass or the right, you know, the slip screen shot. And then where Lance just like, I'm gonna go to the rim and freaking score the ball. And it's the two different guys see the game two different ways, but they fit together because they're willing to work with each other.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what makes them work. You know, at the beginning of the year, we didn't like that duo, but now I love that duo.
Yeah, and I think also part of it too is they've been playing Joseph at the end of games too, so you get to see him by himself separate from Lance, so you get to kind of appreciate Joseph even more.
Yes. But Collison will help all that.
Yeah, I say, going back to Darren Collison, he will help all that. Hopefully he plays. I imagine if you listen to this podcast on a Friday, the team will announce something midday, whether to play or not. I guess they play at home against Milwaukee, right? So there'll be a shoot around. What time is usually the shoot around before games, or like the midday practice? Is there anything?
Like 2:30, 2 for the before that for the shoot around, and then the pregame stuff's at like 5.
Yeah, but I mean, like the where the first chance the media has to talk to McMillan will be probably around 2 or 3, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So that's when we'll officially know whether Collison will play or not. I'm hoping he does.
It's gonna be a weird media session for Nate, because all he'll be talking about is Booker and Collison.
That's true, and that's probably one thing we should hit, is that if Collison returns, they'll be this 10-team deep, a 10-man deep team.
Yeah.
They won't have to play Jefferson, won't have to play Leaf, won't have to play Joe Young. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's huge. Exactly. And the Wizards are one of those teams that sometimes has two bigs on the court, so Booker could be useful in that Sunday game. But anyway, yes, the 10-deep thing is nice.
We'll talk about that later. I have a counter to that point, but we'll talk about that later when we preview them. Do you want to hit rumors? You want to write to games?
You can glance on some rumors, but I don't want to talk too much about them.
So this is a couple weeks ago. We're just getting around to it because we didn't really want to talk about it, but we have some time. It's a Friday show. It's more relaxed, more, I don't know. We have extra time. We don't want to go over usually an hour for these podcasts, but I think this one won't be more than 45 minutes. So we have some time. There's been probably a rumor being circulated by Aaron Gordon's agent, I would assume,
for sure,
that the Pacers might be interested in him in the offseason. I guess I wouldn't mind the Pacers signing him, but for the money he probably wants, I'm not sure he's worth it. I don't know if there's anything really to it. I doubt he comes here at the end of the day. I think whatever he's a restricted free agent, so whatever offer sheet is signed, I imagine the magical match, because he's 22 years old and so much potential. But maybe if you get him on some kind of weird deal like the Parsons one, where you kind of screw the team over in some way, kind of like the way Otto Porter got a deal for it. He was got like 7.5% increases every year, which is kind of like, that's where the Nets, they might be able to like snag him away from Washington. Something weird like that.
I think the Pacers will probably not offer him unless they really think they can get him, because They don't want to lock up that much cap space for that long if they just think the Magic are going to match. And I think it's a bogus rumor, to be honest. You said it right. It's probably almost certainly, at least from his agent. And the three teams mentioned in the report, I think it was Sean Devaney at the Sporting News, was that the source told him that the teams interested in Gordon would be like the Suns and the Pacers and the Mavericks. Coincidence that those three teams are three of the teams that could have the most cap space this summer. So he just picked three teams to get leverage on the Magic. So, you know, respect, he's doing his job, but I don't think the Pacers are leaking their front office plans or anything like
that. Yeah, I don't think it's bad to be also just circulating rumors you have cap space. That lets everybody in the league kind of know, oh, Pacers have some money. Maybe they'll want to sign me kind of thing. I don't know. I don't think it's a bad thing to be in rumors. Nothing wrong with being in
rumors. No, I don't think it's bad. It's just I think that put two and two together, like why – like look at the three-team list of on there. You know?
It's definitely the agent basically going out, all right, my client's Aaron Gordon. We want 20 to 25 million a year. All right, who has that cap space? Okay, Suns do, Mavs do, Pacers could. All right, we'll just say those three teams want him and just start spreading it to some guy on Bleacher Report, basically probably they did.
Pretty much.
The other rumor we could hit real quick, this has been one that's been going on for a while. It's the Isaiah Thomas to the Pacers. It's actually become more realistic now that Isaiah probably won't get re-signed by the Lakers and is probably not going to get a max deal anymore. He's probably he's far, far away from what he wanted last time, which is probably a four-year, $100 million deal. I saw somewhere where if he got a two-year 20 with the same kind of Collison deal, that might be a move for the Pacers. But at the end of the day, I think we both agree. We don't want him because he's too hard to build a defense around.
Keep him far away from the Pacers, please.
Yeah, I guess if his offense is as good as it was with Boston two seasons ago, you do want him, but I'm not sure you can get there again, and I'm not sure you want to risk trying to build it. And just he's so bad on D, and I don't want to blame him because it's his height. It's not just him. It's his height. He just is a bad defender because of his height, and everybody takes advantage of that, and you don't want to have to build a whole thing around that.
Exactly, and his defense would be terrible next to Vic and Miles, and you take the ball out of Vic's hands, and even if he was Boston scoring levels, he might not be a perfect fit. So,
yeah, because he was the best offensive player? Even if he was the best offensive player in the league, but he was by far the worst defender, that makes you like an average player.
Oh, he's way better than an average player last year, but now he's an average player.
I know, that was a topic on the Dan Le Batard show where they were trying to figure that out. I mean, he's the average player if you're the worst defender in the league and the best offensive player. No, he was above average, but he was still – it's just not worth – I don't think it's worth the risk, to be honest.
No, I agree.
Because you could screw up your whole chemistry and everything.
Yes, which would be a disaster.
Yeah. Let's move on, though, to some game previews. All right, so the Pacers have a couple games coming up this week. Two games this weekend, one against the Bucks on Friday, Wizards on Sunday, and then we're actually going to preview Monday's game against the Bucks again, so we don't have to do that for our Monday show. So we're actually going to post our weekly show next week on Tuesday. Be a day off. We've done that a couple of times, so nothing you guys aren't unfamiliar with. With the Bucks game, we're going to preview both games because they play them twice in 4 days, right?
Yes. And these are huge games. Massive, massive games. They are a game apart in the standings, is that right? And they are currently tied in the tiebreaker 1-1. So winning one of the games is crucial. Winning both would be awesome.
Yeah, I believe they are only they're a game and a half back of the Wizards, though.
Yes, and they are also behind the Wizards 0-1 in the season series. So if they play them twice this month, too. So, again, crucial games.
You have the Bucks numbers up?
Oh, I do have the Bucks numbers up. Sorry, I was looking at tiebreaker stuff because we're going to have to track all that playoff scenario junk.
I think that's something we deal with in a couple of weeks when they have to play Philly. And
in the middle of the month, we'll probably do a playoff scenarios breakdown.
Yeah, when it gets a little, when we can get some more figured out. Right now, it's still just kind of a cluster.
Yeah, there's a month to go. The Bucks are 24th in pace. They are 12th in offense and 19th in defense, 33 and 28 right now. And they're 10-6 under their new head coach, Joe Prunty, which I think is the most substantial difference in this team. Also noteworthy is that, I don't know if you saw this on Roto-World because you looked there for injuries, but Giannis's eye injury from their last game, he's still questionable for Friday.
Yeah, but Giannis said, quote, not a big deal.
Okay, I imagine he'll play. Brogdon, Tony Snell's questionable. Toledovich is still out. Dele's still out. Like, if Giannis doesn't play, they only have 10 guys who can play, so he's going to play, I bet.
Yeah, Giannis is going to play at least in one of the two games, so we can just bet on that. Sure. What's odd, actually, is the Pacers played the Bucks twice already, also in a five-day stretch.
Oh, yeah, that is weird.
but it was like a tale of two different games. So the first game against the Bucks, Oladipo didn't play. That's probably why they lost. Man. They lost by 21. Never in it. Sabonis was great off the bench, had 24, but still a minus nine. Whole team with negatives. I mean, it was a terrible game. Giannis had 31. Milton killed them also with 27. Then 5 days later, Oladipo returns. I actually went to this Bucks game with Marina, and they come back and they only won by 13, but they dominated the whole game. I think they were up by 30 at one point. I mean,
remember, because the Bucks came back a ton, and you texted me and said, "Ask Nate why he put the starters back in up 15 with 2 minutes to go."
Well, okay, they came back a ton, but like 15 or 2 minutes ago was still a comfort.
I'm agreeing with you. I'm just how I remember that game. It's from
that's right. Yeah, but they were up by 35. I mean, they were cruising. And a third quarter, I'm trying to remember the score at the end of the third quarter. So they must have been up 23 at the end of the third quarter, which is basically a recipe for a blowout. It was a pretty even, though, game. None of the starters scored more than 15 or less than 11. And Sabonis, again, was the leading scorer with 17. It's just kind of two completely opposite games. Also, the first game was in Milwaukee. Second game was in Indianapolis. That was a huge difference as well. I think this first Friday one is winnable. I think you get the Monday. It's going to be a lot harder, especially on a back-to-back.
Monday's at home, but it is on a back-to-back. So
I thought, it's flipped.
Friday in Milwaukee. No, it's a road trip. Friday in Milwaukee.
That's right. My bad.
Monday in Washington. Either way, they're both hard for different reasons. And Giannis is the second best player in the conference, top five player in the NBA. He's just a beast. So we can't pick him as our butcher, but he's just so challenging to stop. And the Pacers have had trouble with him. Thad does okay on him, but I mean, doing okay on Giannis is still not great. And now they have Jabari back too. So they have even more scoring on their offense. So they're really potent, hard to stop when they have all these guys.
Yeah. With Giannis though, it's not about stopping him. It's about letting him get his and not let him go any farther than that. Exactly. So get us 29 points, whatever he gets a game. I think he's at 20 a game right now. But actually the fact that I mix that up kind of changes my view. I think they might lose both games.
Ooh, yikes.
Which is worrisome. They might lose all three of these games, which is going to really, really set them back.
Yes, that would be devastating. Five in a row losses. I don't know. If you told me right now Giannis would play, I'd say it'll be a close game. If he doesn't play, I think they're going to win. But that eye injury is bad, so we'll have to see what's up with that. But they Joe Prunty's really changed them. They don't trap anymore on defense, which we talked about the first two times they played, how that would help the Pacers knock down some threes. They really are better on the man-to-man thing. They've been passing the ball around more. They just look like a better coach team. So,
yeah, shocker there. Jason Kidd, the worst coach in the NBA, gets fired, and they are looking like a better coach team.
Like a better team. What a shocker. Terry was – sorry, I'm on the Bucks B-ball ref page. Jason Terry was born in 1977. That's crazy.
So what does that make him, 41?
He's a 41-year-old. Yeah.
Dang. Dirk's what, 39 right now?
Sorry, he's 40. He turns 41 this year. Yeah, Dirk and Vince are both a year younger. Okay. In age, not in years played in age, but still, that's crazy.
So what I was trying to get to, though, was I assume, I could be wrong, both of us, our butcher on the Bucks team is going to be Chris Middleton.
Oh, no, mine is not Chris
Middleton. So yours is Jabari.
Mine is not Jabari.
Okay, then who is your butcher?
Mine is Eric Bledsoe.
Okay, that should have been the third one. I was thinking Milton killed them the first game he played. He had 27. He was awesome. I mean, he is a really good player, in my opinion. I think
he's a sick role player.
Yeah, he's like the perfect just like comment to Giannis, to be honest. Yes,
he is awesome. And they just have so much lineup versatility at every position except for point guard, which is why I picked Bledsoe, because I feel like no matter who's around him, he's going to be out there doing his thing. And he's such a dangerous player. And he's a good defensive point guard, which the Pacers struggle with.
Yeah, I can see that. If Collison plays, at least they'll have something to go up against.
Like yes,
some competent offensive player. With Giannis, though, one thing to look for, too, is he's only a 29% three-point shooter. He rarely shoots the three, and that's something that actually could help the Pacers because they could slack off him a ton. That's why Thad Young has a better shot guarding him.
Yep. And Thad is better – well, Thad falls asleep off-ball a lot, but he's better at roaming than anything else. I don't know. He's a weird defender.
Yeah, he's good. Sometimes he's just terrible. I think it's just – depends with Thad, we get what night, basically.
Yeah, I really hope Giannis doesn't play so they can just wallop. Well, I want him to play because I want to watch him, but I don't know. They need the win.
No, because Giannis doesn't play Friday. He'll definitely play Monday, so at least we can see him play. But then Friday, they can win.
Touche.
A difference, though, also in this game, I kind of teased it with Jabari Barker is going to play in this game. He did not play in any of the last two games. He's been easing his way back in.
He has not been that awesome.
No, he's been I mean, he is shooting, it looks like 44% from three, but he's only taking 1.6 per game. So I don't know that really a big enough sample size. That's 16 threes over 10 games he's played. not a really big sample size, and he's playing only 20 minutes. He's kind of similar to what Glenn Robinson, honestly, was being restricted. It's kind of the same way. He's a better player than Robinson, I think. But
this is what they want Jabari to be, because his free throw attempt rate is almost 40%, and the three ball is falling. He's just still a terrible defender.
Yeah, and he was a terrible defender at Duke too, and he just had, he just I don't know whether it's because he has to play, he should play power forward or something where he has to, he can get like a little bit, but then he can't stretch out very well. So I don't know. He's fine in the spot he could be at as like a bench player, but I'm not sure he can reach anything better. But he's something to watch off the bench, because I'm just, I imagine if he's in, we'll see. I guess might see Trevor Booker guard him.
Ooh, I don't know. I don't think that's a good matchup. I think Glenn would guard him.
So you think if they – so if on the bench unit, if let's say Jabari – has Jabari been playing the 4-3 mix, right?
Yeah, I can look.
They've been playing, I think, lineups with Giannis and him.
Basically 50-50 between 4 and 3 for him.
Because it depends if Giannis is in with him or not. Giannis is in with him. Giannis might actually play – might guard the 3 but play the 4. Some kind of weird mix like that. But that means off the bench, I'm trying to think, push with Gardner as a power forward would be like Sabonis, maybe Young, Glenn. Those are kind of the 3.
Yep.
And I don't know if I like Sabonis on him.
Booker might feel like a small stretch, but we don't know what his role is or anything. And that's a kind of matchup that Booker would struggle with. So I hope that doesn't happen.
I don't know if I like Sabonis on him, to be honest. I think he can kind of bully Sabonis to the rim and kind of.
I don't know.
The bigger player than Sabonis.
He's way faster than Sabonis.
Yeah. So that's a worry. That's a worrisome thing there. But, you know, there's not much that scares you about this team. They're probably give or take 9 deep, right? I mean, it depends where you grade Thon Maker.
He's a quality NBA player.
He's fine. He's a little thin, but he's fine.
Jason Kidd was using him incredibly poorly.
That's probably also true.
9 deep, yeah, I can live with that.
But if Dellavedova doesn't play and Giannis doesn't play, like you said, there's like 7 quality
Brogdon's players. Out. He's a good NBA player. I would say they are 8 deep with no Brogdon.
Yeah. So Pacers are theoretically 10 deep if Collison plays.
Yes.
Which is could be a factor in this game, especially because they play twice. And I'm sure no matter what happens in the first game, whatever team loses will fix what they did wrong and play better than the second game, just because that's how it worked last time too.
Yeah. And sorry, big yawn. Woo, long day.
Tony's falling asleep at 6:30 on a Thursday night. This is
so. Did you know that the Bucks game on next Monday is also back to back for them?
I did. It's a back to back against the Wizards, which is not good. That's 2 playoff teams.
Whoa! Hang on. I meant the Bucks game. Indiana next Monday is a back to back for the Bucks.
Oh, I thought you were setting up my tease. My bad.
No, I wanted to quell your fears about the Bucks game next Monday.
I actually think I did know that because we talked about this. It might have been on the show or off the when we were talking just like off the show because we were previewing this and trying to figure it out, I think, at one point.
I don't remember.
But so I guess that's not as bad, right? They both play back-to-backs. That helps.
As bad. Exactly.
Yeah. I think March is a brutal month for the NBA in general. I think a lot of teams play every other day. I mean, a lot of teams hit 15, 16 games in March.
Yeah, and they had the schedule kind of weird about March Madness-y stuff too. Like, that's why the matchups are so weird sometimes. It's just an odd month for the NBA.
Yeah, and I think part of it too is you lose an extra game basically in February by only being 28 days, so you have to make it up in March.
Yes, that too.
So most teams play, what, like 15, 14, 15 games a month, but maybe they play 16 now.
A lot going on and the early start, but the back-to-back will not be fun.
No, but let's talk about the Wizards now.
We didn't pick an X-Factor.
Okay. You want to do X-Factor real quick?
Yeah, really quick. I think Vic bounces back, though, so I pick Vic.
Wow, Tony. You've spent weeks texting me about how Oladipo's in a slump and all this stuff.
He's slumping.
I know, but now you – all of a sudden, you're like, nah, I'm on Vic's side. He's going to have a bounce back in.
Well, like that. Brogdon means he's guarded by either a wing who he's got a speed advantage on or a player that is just not that good on defense. So I think he's going to have a good cheat game.
I think if Miles Turner can stay out of foul trouble, we'll have a really good game.
Yeah,
that's a huge if. But if he can stay out of foul trouble, we can have a really nice game.
Huge if. Gosh, the Pacers have got to learn to stop fouling in the post.
Yeah, and again, I want to watch the Giannis Turner matchup. I like to see that go at the rim.
That would be fun.
All right, now let's go to the Wizards game because the first time they played the Wizards, they lost in the game without Depot and not Collison. I believe it was the week before the All-Star break, so it was kind of a weird game. Do you have their numbers up, or you want me to read them?
Yes, I got it. 15th in pace, 8th in offense, and 13th in defense. I don't know what of those numbers is the most surprising, but they're all good, and the Wizards are good.
And they've been really good recently without John Wall. Shockingly, actually.
9-4 since he went down. That's crazy.
Like I mean, my goodness, they're the same level. Like, they didn't drop off.
Yeah, at all. Satoransky has been awesome.
And it really shows how good Bradley Beal is.
Oh, he's been awesome, too. And he was good against the Warriors the other night. You know, a lot of good stuff for the Wizards. It's scary that John Wall has not helped them be better this year.
It is scary because they owe him, what, $40 million in the next four, or $40 to $50 million over the next 4 years?
5 years till 2022.
Yeah, it's scary when your best guy you're about to pay a F ton of money is not playing right now, and your team is just as good.
Yeah, like, that's bad.
Like, in a normal situation, you could just trade him and get some good pieces and maybe build a championship team around Beal, but maybe not now.
No. Man, I can't stop.
Yeah, you got to wake up. We're almost done this podcast, but you got to wake up.
Slap myself in the face. Yeah, I agree. That's concerning. And they're going to pay Kelly Oubre soon. Their team's going to be super expensive. I don't know what they're going to do.
So, butcher-wise, Beal is probably not the best game he's ever
seen. Wow, we're not even going to talk about the Wizards. Just going to jump into the Butchers.
Well, what else you got to say? I was going to go by player by player. I was sort of like, Beal was the guy I was going to talk about because Beal is the best player on their team. He's going to put up probably 25 of 28 points.
We're going to see the old 2012-2013 Mahimi v. Booker matchup again.
I'm excited for that.
I know you're not, but I am.
Did you know they put against the game against the Cavs, and Jan Mahimi was guarding LeBron for a second?
Yeah. Mahimi's like bad, obviously, but he's underrated. He's not like terrible.
No, I mean that in a bad way. Like, what the hell is Scott Brooks doing bad?
Scott Brooks just won Coach of the Month.
I think that was all on Bradley Beal's shoulders.
And Satoransky, yeah.
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 But so without Wall, the lineup, you've said his name like 15 times now. So it's Satoransky, Beal, Porter, Morrison, Gortat, right? That's the starting five.
Yeah. And then their bench is Frazier and Meeks come in, or Oubre comes in first, and then Frazier and Meeks play the backup guards, and Mahimi plays backup center. They don't really play a backup four.
Yeah, and like I was saying,
Scott plays sometimes but he got hurt, and then he's been worse recently. So,
and like I was saying, our probably butcher would be Bradley Beal.
Yeah,
he's probably going to have us 25-28. But if you had to separate, you know, your next guy Satoransky as your
My next guy's Otto Porter.
Okay,
so Otto Porter has been on fire since John Wall came out. Not implying that that's a correlation, just implying that that is a thing that's happening. His three-point percentage is up to 42 this year on pretty high volume. He's just a really efficient player. He never turns the ball over. I'm trying to find John Wall's injury on this so I can get it. I'll just guess. It was late January, I believe. So since Wall's injury, Porter is averaging 19.4 points per game, 41% from three, 53% from the field overall. Pretty dang good.
Yeah, you're a little off. I did the 13-game stretch. But it was 40% from three.
I did 14 game stretch.
So that's why you're a little off. But right, you said they were 9-4 with Adam, so it's 13 game stretch. But yeah, Porter's been great.
Dang it.
Only the math major over here.
I guessed late January and I just went with January 27th. I should have gone with the 30th.
I'm particularly scared of them off the bench with Oubre. He's been really good. Basically, he's kind of hit this I don't want to say it's the next level, but like the combination of him and Porter as like developing into actually like legitimately above average NBA players makes the Wizards just scary in general as a team, which is something that we have to give credit to Scott Brooks for. You know, I understand Brooks has all his flaws coaching wise, but no matter where he's been able to develop talent. I mean, he did it in OKC. He developed a ton of talent there, obviously. And he's done it here in Washington where he's developed, you know, I would say the combination of Beal, Porter, and Oubre into really something like Beal into a next level type of shooting guard, and Oubre and Porter into like, oh, Porter actually probably is worth his contract or close to it now.
He got it because he was worth it last year. But
but there was the worry that like it was like his first good year, right? It's kind of a fluke year. There was kind of worry it might not stay.
I didn't think that. I love Porter. He's a great player.
Well, I understand you didn't think that as the Wizards writer, but it was a fluke year where he was shot 37% from three the year before and then all of a sudden shot 43%. Sorry. So like that was kind of a worry, but obviously it wasn't a fluke. It's a continuing thing. That's part of developing talent.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, he's done a good job of that. I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, Oubre. Yeah. This is attempt two for the Oubre-Lance fight that is inevitably going to happen in one of these Wizards games.
What was the issue the first time?
They were just so chippy the whole game because they both play with a lot of passion, and Oubre doesn't have any time for Lance's bullshit.
I can't wait. I think Lance is too actually controlled to actually throw a punch.
I don't know. I think he'd just stand there and laugh.
I think against LeBron he can get mad, but I think against nobody else does he really care. I think Lance believes he's on a different level than everybody else, and I'm not sure you want to mess with Lance if you're Oubre. I don't think Oubre like is that overpowering big guy. Like Lance is a pretty big dude.
Yeah.
Carries himself big too. Kind of.
I don't know. I would not mess with Kelly Oubre.
You know, Lance likes to puff his chest and carry himself kind of with like a nice little strut. So I would be afraid of Lance.
I think they're both guys who act tougher than they are.
I would agree. I don't know. Lance is probably pretty tough.
Yeah, maybe. Blowing in LeBron's ear, nothing tougher.
I guess. Nothing stupider at the time. Whatever it is. Let's do Pacers. Let's do Pacers and X-Factors.
Yes. They don't play great post defense, I guess. Mahimi's a pretty good post defender, but that's their best post defender. So I like Turner or Sabonis to have a good game. I'll take Sabonis. His passing will be huge against them. They like Zach Lowe wrote about that in one of his 10 things he likes and don't like, is that they scramble to recover a lot. So I'll go with Sabonis.
Yeah, I would say Turner too. Turner's been playing really well.
He has.
When he can stay out of foul trouble.
Twitter is quiet about it. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's coming in before the All-Star break. I mean, he basically has like a 19-point game. He basically scores 19 or more when he can actually get less than three fouls in a game, which means he's actually playing the entire time. I'm looking at it like the 10 games he has five and like seven and six are all games where he's got four or five fouls, basically. The games where he has 20 or more, it's all because he has three fouls.
Yes.
It's like it's the most frustrating thing ever, and we've hit it like four times in the show, but it's just so frustrating.
Both the centers are foul prone.
Yeah, and that's even worse because then it forces Al Jefferson to play, and that's a whole other road you don't want to go down.
I thought he was going to play against Atlanta, but he didn't.
Yeah, I like Al Jefferson. He can do a little bit, but like if they're really serious about trying to win against like the Wizards, Jefferson can't play. Hawks maybe fine. I can understand that, but not against the.
Ever since he led that win against the Nets, I kind of wanted him to play against the Hawks.
Did he right before the break? Right, he led that win.
Yeah.
But to be honest, I did not watch the entire game. That was one game I was sort of just – I had to do a preview for it. We were doing a Sour Cap show. I kind of checked it out.
You got to watch these crappy games, man.
I watched that Dallas game from the start to the finish, and that was the crappiest game of the season. Yeah. The Hawks is pretty crappy too, but I watched every second of the Dallas game, and that was frustrating.
The Hawks game we watched opposite quarters. I watched the first three, and then they were down by 21, so I turned it off, and then you turned it on, and they almost came back. So now we know. I'm a big conspiracy guy. That was a correlation.
It's your fault. Where's my? Well, no, I should watch the entire time.
No, it was your fault. I was gonna say you should watch. I should not have watched any of the game, and you should have watched the whole game. It's both. Yeah, of us.
I should have. My butcher though is gonna be actually gonna be the second Bojan revenge game.
Yes.
29 last time, 9 of 15. Obviously, Vic didn't play, so Lance and him dominated the shots because when Vic doesn't play, there's nobody telling him not to shoot.
So you know, Bojan led the team in shots against Dallas. Sorry, random tidbit. That's crazy.
Because Vic was not playing most of the game because he was in foul trouble. Bojan has his green light to shoot, except when Vic's on the floor, because Vic kind of like says, no, let me have the ball.
Right.
Because, I don't know, Bojan like is like a supposed knockdown shooter, allegedly knockdown shooter. Is this triggering you at all?
Carry on about the Wizards.
Oh, is it triggering you at all?
I want you to carry on about the Wizards.
Okay, well, Bojan had 29 points last time, played on their team last year. He wanted a contract at the end of the season, didn't get it, pissed about it, whatever it is. I'm happy if he's on the Pacers. If he's pissed about it, maybe he'll have a 30-point game.
I hope so. That would be really cool. I know he wanted to get I think he wanted to get re-signed there.
Yeah, he wanted a three-year, $50 million deal, and they looked at him and said, no.
Yeah, no, we got tax problems. Yeah, that's
We're all going to pay. We're going to be paying our point guard who we don't need anymore so much money. It's not going to it's going to hurt us. We're going to be the luxury tax for the next 15 years.
Yeah, so they got I don't know if they dodged a bullet necessarily. He'd be helping them for sure, but it is what it is. And he's helping here. And I like that. I like him to have a good game. Him and Porter kind of play similarly. So,
yeah, the Pacers honestly match up kind of like the same style as the Wizards in a lot of ways. I mean, you got the Beal and Depot comp, obviously.
So I think my thing to watch, this was like my second in line for both X-Factor and Butcher, was the Satoransky-Collison combo. just because Satoransky is 6 inches taller. So that is a striking difference.
Yeah, it's kind of like when Collison had to play Ben Simmons. And actually, the first time Collison didn't play great, but the second time he did. So
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, sometimes even if a guy's – Collison has been in the league a long time. He's always been the smallest guy. It's not like he's, like, not used to being the shortest guy on the court. So I'm not sure I'll have that much trouble with a guy like Satoransky, who's not as good on defense as Ben Simmons.
Yeah, yes, I agree. I think he'll do okay. It's just going to be hard for him to stop him being 6'6".
Let's not do scores. Let's just do how many games do you think they win this weekend?
Including the next, both Bucks games? Or
yeah, I'd say those three we're previewing, sorry.
One.
Which one?
Oh, I have to pick one?
Yeah.
I was just hedging my bets. Like,
I knew you were, so I started to catch you off guard.
Let's say 30% on the road. No, 35% on the road in Milwaukee, and then like 35% on the road in Washington, and then like 60% at home against Washington. So there's 1.3 wins.
Okay.
You know what? I'm going to pick one and be specific. I'm going to pick the road Milwaukee game, actually.
Interesting. All right.
They're rattled, and I don't know. They'll have that chip on their shoulder. I think they can pull that one off.
I think they win both Bucks games but lose to the Wizards.
Okay. That would be my second best guess.
I think the Wizards are playing so dang well. But also the Pacers hit these slumps like they did this early in the week, and they figure it out. Like they get a couple days off or whatever, and the team resets and gets put together and get a guy back, and all of a sudden they figure it out and they're fine. So for all we know, they win all three.
Yeah, we'll be fine. They've had this happen before.
Yeah, like we thought they were going to kill these two teams and they didn't. So what the hell do we know? We're always wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're never right. What the Pacer Pride podcast, we said they were going to win, or with those guys, we said they were going to win by like 30 combined, and they lost by a combined 10.
Yeah, that was embarrassing. I feel dumb for those. I said that on my solo yesterday. I was like, yeah, I think they had a good chance to win by 20 against the Hawks, and they lost.
Of course they did. What are you writing about?
My big, long Trevor Booker, 1,500 words, breaking down what he is as a player, is alive. So you should go check that out if you're excited for him like I am. Other than that, I think I'll do something about Glenn Robinson's cuts tomorrow or Victor Oladipo's all defensive team chances. I don't know. I have a lot of stuff I'm thinking about doing that I haven't done yet.
So what are Vic's all defensive team chances? I'm trying to
think. Well, I can't answer well yet because someone proposed it for the 8 points, 9 seconds mailbag that Jacob Lane writes. Shout out to Jacob. But I responded to that person and said, this is a great question. I would love to write about it sometime. I'm glad you asked that. And then Jacob let me do it. So I'm going to do it, but I haven't done the research, and I wanted to write about it for two reasons. One, to really dig into his defensive stats, and two, to do the research myself. But anyway, we kind of knocked down some of it earlier. I don't think he'd make the first team all defense because I think Clay and, you know, Chris Paul probably have first team all defense guards locked up, but the second team he could presumably make.
Well, I'll make sure to ask you on Monday when you have all your stats.
Exactly. I'll be prepared.
I'm sure there's something else I was going to ask you, but now, when are you going to be able to talk to Trevor Booker, you think, for the first time? When are you going to go to a media day, or when's the next
one? Their next home practice, I believe, is next Tuesday, so probably then, but I don't know yet which day I'm going next week. I'll probably try to go both, though.
Do you think when you go, it's going to be like a hot ticket where it is like all the Pacers are going to be around him, or do you think it's going to be like, he's on the team,
Yeah, no, come on, get excited.
I'm not saying either way. I'm just saying.
I think he'll get the most media that day, yeah.
Okay, so you won't be able to get any exclusive thing. It'll be like the Indy Star guy and who else? It's like five of you, right? You usually do it together?
Exclusives will be out about him probably Saturday, their day off in between Milwaukee and Washington, because he joins the team Friday, well, presumably. So, you know, I'm sure Boylan and Jeremiah will talk to him that day.
And I bet Cliff will be on the road probably grabbing
too. Cliff, whoever's on the road right now. I think it's Cliff. You're right. Yeah, I think they'll probably talk to him before then too. So we'll get it to go read a lot about him, and then we'll see how he plays, and then I'll lob him some questions.
All right, well, I'll look forward to hearing those things. Anything else you got for today's show?
I'm not as worried about this team as everyone else. I just think Collison's really important. That's all I have to close with.
I would agree with you. I think Depot is going to have a bounce back game too, and he'll maybe hopefully for the month of March we'll like Bowie on when February hit, shoot better from three, and it'll change everybody's view, and maybe they'll have this kind of correlation of where Bowie should live up three, and so does Vic, and this team is rolling.
And then they hit the playoffs, and everyone's shooting 100% from three. And
then... Well, no, then they hit the playoffs, everybody drops off, they lose the first round in five games. Sorry, be depressive about that.
Ah, well, If they make it, hey, great stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's been today's Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, we will be back on Monday and Tuesday next week. At least we'll tweet out a schedule sometime over the weekend. You can always follow us on Twitter at Locked On Pacers, Tony at Tease NBA, me at Friedman Adam 5. Hit us up on Twitter. Any comments, questions, whatever you want to talk to us about, we respond pretty well, and usually we're pretty nice. Have a great rest of your day.
Always nice.
Oh, well, Tony's always nice. I'm not always nice. That's been it today's Locked On Pacers podcast. The second try. Have a nice day.